question. The intention is not to move this bill out today, but to simply put some issues before you on which you'll need to make decisions. So if I could just briefly go over what I've handed out for you today. You have a number of papers in front of you, and I'll briefly describe each one of those, and then we'll get started on the discussion.
Let's see, we have to maintain a quorum.
You do need to maintain a quorum for a work session.
Okay.
Okay.
So in other words, nobody leaves?
As long as you're not going to vote.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the critical point. First, I've got a one-page summary for you entitled K-12 State School Fund and Other K-12 Grants, and we'll go over that in a minute. That shows you governor's budget, co-chair's budget, and then the difference. Behind that is that standardized spreadsheet that you used to see for all the state agencies, and we'll also be talking about that later on in the discussion. Just for your information, I distributed this to you a few months ago when we had the public hearings on this bill. This is the memo from the legislative fiscal officer on the issues with the current service level calculation for the state school fund, and I do want to discuss that issue a little bit later this morning and just put some information in front of you and a proposal for a statement of expectations. Behind that, Mr. Chair, you had asked for some information on the federal fund, and I know you've gotten a lot of different spreadsheets on that. This is yet another one. This shows you the grant and aid programs, first column, 9901, legislatively approved budget, and then the next one, the governor's, and the one after that is estimated as of June 2001. And then the changes from the estimated, from the LAB to the estimated, and the governor's to the estimated.
So, Sue, the estimated is the additional dollars.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winters, that's correct, the estimated additional dollars. And you'll see it's about $100 million more than the governor's budget, which is what we added to the grant and aid budget for federal funds limitation in anticipation of that. Behind that, you have both a letter from the department on its letterhead and also an analysis from the Department of Administrative Services. The department is requesting some supplemental limitation for 9901 for timber revenues that were unanticipated for the state school fund, and they need additional other funds expenditure limitations to distribute those, and we'll talk about that in more detail as well. And then just for your information, we're not really going to discuss this in detail, but I've provided for you from Legislative Revenue Office the school run that shows by school district what the per student amounts would be. And again, I'm not prepared today to discuss that in any detail or any of its nuances.
But this is run on the governor's revised budget.
Mr. Chair, this would be on the basically the 5.2. That's correct.
And does that anticipate?
As the co-chairs would do it, or as the governor would do it? There's a little difference.
Mr. Chair and Senator Trode, should be similar because the local option, it's a local option grant. Those are not in there, and that's the main difference, as we'll talk about in a few minutes between those two budgets.
All right.
And Mr. Schrader, I'm sorry, did you have a question?
And the current state school funding formula, is that correct?
Representative Schrader, this would be premised on Senate bills 519, Senate bill. 519, 260, and 253 is noted in that box.
What do each of those do, if I may ask?
That's right.
Senate Bill 519 is your school distribution formula bill. Senate Bill 260 pertains to the ESDs and addresses some phase-ins of equalization, and Senate Bill 253 pertains to changing some billing for special ed services instead of the department. As I understand it, instead of them billing the county school fund, it would come off the top of the state school fund.
So, okay. We scheduled to have another work session, not soon after now. Okay. For those of you who just came in late, we are going to work the bill, but we're not going to take action to pass it out today. And because there's a lot of background information, be helpful for all of us. And At this moment, I would say we will have a meeting tomorrow at 10 o'clock to continue this work, and I can't tell you for sure when we will pass Senate Bill 5514 out, but we'll be working on it. Okay, Sue?
Okay. So if you'll turn your attention then to that first, that one-page summary, K-12 state school fund and other K-12 grants, I'll walk you through that. This is kind of a refresher course for what's in the governor's proposed budget and then what's in the co-chair's budget and the difference. And again, the governor's recommended budget for the state school fund and some other special K-12 grants, but not including the grant and aid programs that you passed in Senate Bill 5512, is $5.2 billion. And if you look at this one-page summary, you'll see by looking at the first table and then the column at the far right, that this 5.2 comprises $4,820,000.
Sue, excuse me, are you on the governor's budget or the co-chairs?
I'm sorry, I'm on the governor's, the first table at the top.
Mm-hmm.
The 5.2 comprises $4,823,186,056 general fund, and then $257,717,086 in lottery funds, and $133,691,000 other funds. And this recommended budget is about a 10% increase over 9901 estimated expenditures. And I would point out to you that the budget does not continue 9901 funding of $127 million from lottery bonds or the $41.4 million in Senate Bill 622 proceeds, since the legislative intent was to consider these one-time funding. And this $5.2 billion budget is primarily for those dollars that are distributed to schools through the state's school distribution formula. However, you'll notice in that top table that there are three additional components in the general fund section. And again, if you'll look at that top table in the center column, Senate Bill 5514, which is what you have before you, you'll see that there's $5 million for local option equalization grants, $10.5 million for the data integrity assurance project, and then if you look in the column for Senate Bill 5513, you'll see $110 million for the school improvement fund in general fund and $110 million in the tobacco settlement proceeds. And you'll recall that when you took action on 5513, you deleted the other funds limitation in that bill because in the co-chair's budget, there'll be no tobacco settlement proceeds in the K-12 budget. And so all this school improvement fund dollars are general fund dollars. If you then look at the second table on that page, you'll see the co-chair's budget. And again, that reflects in that first column entitled Senate Bill 5513, having the school improvement fund funded entirely with general fund dollars. And then if you look in the second column, you'll see that there's no longer $5 million for the local option equalization grants. You took action on House Bill 2300 a few days ago, and you appropriated $1 million for that program in House Bill 2300. And that's reflected there in the co-chair's budget. For the data integrity assurance project, you've heard that the Advancing E-Government subcommittee is recommending that out of the $10.5 million in the governor's budget for that $175,000 be appropriated to the Department of Education for a feasibility study. And in fact, when you took action on the Department of Education's operations bill, Senate Bill 5511, you did increase that budget by $175,000 general fund for that purpose. And then the Advancing E-Government subcommittee is recommending that the remaining $10.325 million be appropriated to the emergency board pending some reporting by the Department of Education on its proposed project. You'll see that the lottery funding amount stays the same. And then in the other fund section, you'll see a new line called the Medicaid Upper Payment Limit State School Fund, and you'll see $94.2 million there. And what the co-chairs have in their budget is a corresponding reduction in general fund dollars for that $94.2 million in Medicaid Upper Payment Limit funds. So if you look over to the far right column in the co-chair's budget, you'll see the total funding is $5,210,419,142. I've got a small table at the very bottom of that page for you that shows the net difference essentially between the two. And the net difference is $4,175,000. And what that comprises is the reduction in the local option equalization grant program from $5 million to $1 million. So that's $4 million of it. And then moving the $175,000 from the data integrity assurance project over to Department of Operations. So that really isn't a reduction per se in the overall state budget, but it is moving it from what's called the you know, state school fund amount over to Department of Operations. So that's the difference between the governor's budget and the co-chair's budget there.
Representative Schrader.
A couple of questions, if I may, just earlier. What's the reason behind moving some of the general fund out and using the MUPL money for the state school fund grant?
Mr. Chair and Representative Schrader, I can't give you a lot of detail behind the deliberations of that by the co-chairs, other than they felt that that was one of the more appropriate uses of the Medicaid upper payment limit dollars.
Are there other areas in the budget that are not health-related that we're using Medicaid upper payment limit dollars?
Mr. Chair and Representative Schrader, it is my understanding that no, that it's this budget and one other budget that would be considered health-related.
Yeah, may I just interrupt
you?
I thought that there was $101 million of the MUPL that was in the OHSU budget.
There is, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
That's correct. It is an OHSU's budget.
Okay, so we're talking more than just the $106 million. Okay, and this is prospective payments or, let's see, is that Medicaid or Medicare?
It's called the Medicaid upper payment limit.
Medicaid, okay. And so is that revenue that's on its way in the next biennium, or where is that money?
Mr. Chair, as I understand it, currently the state has a portion of what it's considering as its overall resources from this, from the Medicaid upper payment limit monies. In September, there'll be another payment. And beyond that, I'm not quite sure what the schedule is for those monies coming in.
Representative Schrader?
I'm just kind of following along the train of thought there. What is the total MUPL money then used to date in our budget with OHSU and renewal instruments?
Mr. Chair and Representative,
about 217 or 27.
As I understand it, it would be roughly $101 million for OHSU, and then the $94.2 million for K-12.
Okay. Would the, by using the MUPL money in the state school fund, does that affect the CSO rollout for next biennium, 03-05 biennium?
Mr. Chair and Representative Schrader, if I understand your question, you're asking if this is one-time funding. I would just point out that this is a revenue source, and it, as I understand it, it is limited. It is not going to be ongoing. The Healthcare Financing Administration has taken action to essentially dry up this source of funds, but the position that I would take is that regardless of the funding source, it's for ongoing expenditures for schools. So just because the funding source may not be the same next time, the expenditures will still be there. So it wouldn't be a phase out in the CSL, which pertains to expenditures and not revenue sources.
So it doesn't affect.
Just follow up.
Just basically to rephrase my question then, when LFO would calculate the CSL for next session, it would be based upon the 5.2 figure and not a 5.2 minus $94 million. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair and Representative Schrader, at this point I hesitate to go on the record to tell you what I would calculate.
Yeah, CSL, maybe.
But it wouldn't include a factoring out of the 94.2 just because it's a one-time source of funding.
Just a last comment. That
certainly
is monopolizing, but
yeah, I thought you had to leave.
Yeah, I got to leave. just a concern on, you know, it seems this is unusual that, you know, we've gone to great pains to make sure that the tobacco money goes for health purposes. Yep. We made a great pains to make sure most of the MUPA money is going towards health purposes or HSU, which is certainly health related. And here we're putting it into K-12, and I know there's plenty of other health purposes we could allocate that money for. So I have some very severe reservations about going down this path.
Mm-hmm.
Next time we meet, maybe you can bring to us the co-chair's rationale for using how's that?
I'll try to do that, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative.
Well, I was going to echo Representative Schrader's concerns. You know, we kind of in our committee have talked about the utilization of the Medicaid upper limit money and the health-related issues. So I'd just like to have maybe an explanation of why this decision was made.
Okay, other questions or comments? Senator Troy?
No, I agree with that as well. I think it does make sense to know. And I think also if we're not intending that somehow or other the base budget is reduced by this one-time funding,
okay,
then we ought to maybe say so in a budget note or something that the base remains at 5.2.
Right, good point. Okay, Sue, what next here?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would just wrap up that conversation by saying that I believe, you know, the co-chairs did look at different options for using this money, and they felt this NOHSU was the most appropriate place.
Okay.
But I will get you as much detail as I can on their rationale. If there are no other questions on that...
Make sure when you ask the co-chairs that we're not criticizing them, but three of us are on the Human Services sub, too, and it was kind of our feeling that health-related where it's going. But not a complaint, but just asking a question.
There are plenty of health-related things suspended on.
Indeed.
And so,
particularly when I've got a chronological advantage group on my Human Resources here.
Thank you.
Including myself.
Okay, where are we now?
Okay, well, why don't we turn to that standardized spreadsheet to which I referred earlier. And that just gives you the detail of what, pretty much of what we've just discussed, working from the legislatively adopted budget. And it also shows you the governor's recommended and then the LFO recommended, which you'll notice if you look at your one-page sheet is the same as the co-chairs. And I would just point out to you that in the buildup, it includes some essential packages. There's some phasing out. You'll see in package 020, this is on page 1 of 2, there's a transfer of a program that is more appropriate in grant and aid. That's the open program. There's a phase out of some limitation for lottery bonds. You'll see in 030 the inflation added, and then 040 is the student growth package. And if you turn over to page 2 of 2 and 050, you'll see the replacement of general fund with the Medicaid upper payment limit allocation. And then under the policy package section, you'll see the reduction in the data integrity assurance project of $10.5 million, and then a note over to the right that indicates $10.325 million would be appropriated to the emergency board, and the department would have reporting instructions as the Advancing E-Government subcommittee has recommended, and then the movement of the $175,000 to the Department of Education's operations budget. And then
what do they need to do to get that money released? Do we know?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, they need to come to the emergency board and report, have a detailed technology plan on that project, and also they need to report to the Joint Legislative Committee on Information Management and Technology. And I think I mentioned the other day that the Advancing E-Government Subcommittee felt like it couldn't really get its arms around that project, the chair had some concerns about the department's proposal to use multiple data centers in the with this project versus some consolidating and maybe using a centralized system. So there was just a desire on the part of that subcommittee to have more detail mm-hmm. from the Department of Education on that proposal. That's pretty standard.
Is it likely that, you know, I presume that they will clearly want to use that money to do something fairly important with, and so is it a kind of delay that can be easily satisfied so they can get the money released, or is it likely to take a long time to do?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, the first meetings of those two committees will probably be in September or October of mm-hmm. This year, and assuming that the department has been working on this since it received this recommendation from the Advancing Government Subcommittee, I believe they should be able to come to one of the first emergency boards and request the funding.
Yeah. What do they want to use the funding for?
There are, according to the department, there's a need out there to have more, to improve the quality and the consistency and the consolidation of data systems among the schools. The short version.
This reaches away from the department's activity out to the schools? Is that it?
It would mm-hmm. provide services to the schools and, again, address a need out there for certain schools in regard to their data.
Okay. Thank you.
And, Senator, you remember the superintendent's testimony was that they certainly, of course, are amenable to this and they'll work with it, but they hope to make their case that they need to keep a lot of this work in their department, because you asked that question about it. So it seems to me that it's mm-hmm. an appropriate mm-hmm. way to go, as long as we're trying to improve our data assurance project, or integrity of the data insurance, and it seemed like they were very comfortable working, the department was, with this suggestion.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. And then on for policy option package 403, the local option equalization grants, that simply reflects the removal of the $5 million from Senate Bill 5514. And I've noted over there that House Bill 2300 provides $1 million for that program. And then you'll see the totals by fund.
Sure. With regard to yes. that apparently that $1 million would account for the current use of the local option funds. What about any local option attempts that are made during the biennium? There would be no additional money for those, would there, in case you needed to supplement those? Do they just come back the next biennium? Is that what happens?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, as I understand the current version of the bill, if any of those levies are passed in the next biennium, they're not eligible for the matching grants until the subsequent.
Until the next biennium. Okay. Everybody understands that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you'll see the totals by fund type, and then what I've provided for you beneath that is the appropriation to the emergency fund of $10.325 million, the local option grants of $1 million, and then the school improvement fund in Senate Bill 5513 of $220 million, simply so you can see how that corresponds to that one-page sheet where it shows the co-chair's budget of $5,210,419,142.
Mm-hmm. It's nice to have it displayed this way.
Yeah, this is very helpful. Thank you, Sue.
And as I mentioned earlier to you, I provided for you again a copy of the memo from the Legislative Fiscal Officer regarding the current service level issue. And you've heard about the methodology that was used to arrive at the current service level for the state school fund budget, and it's also described in the memo. You heard about that the calculation was developed last fall by the School Revenue Forecast Committee. And you also heard that the Legislative Fiscal Office has concerns about the the methodology used. Especially since that time, we believe there's additional data that's become available that calls into question the budgeted current service level for personal services. And I want to emphasize that because you also heard about rising energy costs in schools and how these and other costs are not considered in the current service level development. And the bottom line, I guess, is that the Legislative Fiscal Office believes it's premature to adopt the Forecast Committee's current service level methodology for the state school fund, and that's primarily because we believe there are numerous policy choices that need to be addressed, and these choices need future consideration and debate. Really, probably what the big issue is whether the state school fund should be treated as any other state budget, even though you do have local decisions impacting how the dollars are spent and, in fact, driving the budget, or whether in treating the state school fund as any other state budget, you should make significant exceptions in developing that budget. And I'll just briefly go over a few.
Oh, can I ask a question?
Sure.
If we treat the state school fund like we do other state budgets, does that mean that we're going to diminish local control?
Mr. Chair and Representative Winters, in developing the budget, no, I don't believe you would. I mean, the dollars would still be distributed out to the school districts where the local decisions would be made on how to spend those dollars.
Question?
Yes, Representative Smith.
So why would we treat the K-12 budget different from other budgets? What's the advantage?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, I would say there are maybe advantages and certainly disadvantages. And if you'll permit me to go over some of the examples, perhaps that'll clarify that. And I suppose it depends on what position you're taking, where you are.
Well, are we
your
saying
opinion of the funds
if we're treating it differently or if we're treating it the same, we're somehow, if we treat it differently, we're acknowledging what? That the school districts have a different funding for their current roll-up costs, and maybe they're not under control, or what?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, it could be a number of things that you're acknowledging. If you're treating it like any other state agency budget, I think what you're acknowledging is that it is a state budget. It should be basically treated the same way in terms of roll-up costs, in terms of COLAs that are allowed, and in terms of how you approach things of that nature. If you treat it differently and allow exceptions based on how local decisions are making, then you've made the decision to basically ignore the methodology that you use for any other state agency and have it stand alone, essentially. But I think the important thing to realize is that you have a huge policy choice in front of you because this is 43% roughly of your general fund budget. And every other budget, you have the agencies come forward and you get the detail behind the budget in terms of roll-up costs, in terms of personnel services, in terms of inflation, caseload, things of that nature. I think with the state school fund, historically it has been a political number. There has been testimony by stakeholders coming in with sometimes actual numbers, but in a lot of cases anecdotal information, and never really a look at this budget like any other state agency budget. And I think Jim Scherzinger made a good point when he was here testifying, and that is if you look at some of the school districts and what they get in terms of state support in their budgets, there are school districts out there that are larger than some state agencies about which you hear quite a lot in terms of their budget, but you don't hear that same detail about the school budget. And if as a policy that's the direction you want to go, that's a choice for you to make. But I would just put before you that with the growth in the state school fund support from the state, that as long as you don't treat this as a state agency, you're going to have some drivers that are beyond,
right,
beyond
and,
your
control. And I think we should address those drivers, but I'm going to table any further discussion until you have a chance to go through this.
Okay. Thank you. What I was going to do is simply put before you some of the differences in how the state school fund budget is calculated, even with the methodology by the School Revenue Forecast Committee, and how that differs somewhat from state agencies. First of all, in the state school fund current service level calculation, it fully funds assumed, and this is just assumed, not what's actually happening out there, but assumed cost of living increases for 0103, and that would be roughly 2.6 and 2.0% for the 2 years in the budget. And what happens with state agencies is, as you probably know, is those cost of living increases typically are not fully funded by the legislature. What happens is a certain amount of funding is put in the emergency fund or a compensation package, and that covers a portion of the increases. But then state agencies are expected to take management action to generate the savings to fully fund those compensation packages. So the question before you would be, do you fully fund the assumed cost of living increases in the state school fund, given that you don't do that for any other state agency? So there's one example. Another example would be that these cost of living increases assumed in the current service level calculation of the state school fund are included in this allowable growth factor that was calculated for school budgets, the one that was determined by the School Revenue Forecast Committee and shared with schools in a January 2001 letter. I would maintain that at that time, schools probably knew about their rising energy costs. They probably knew about their health care costs. But many salary agreements were settled subsequent to that letter being shared with schools, including cost of living adjustments in those agreements that were in excess of the assumed cost of living adjustment in the School Revenue Forecast Committee's calculation, and even in some cases in excess of the overall allowable growth factor. So the question there is, you know, should the legislature consider requiring schools to stay within that allowable growth factor? Currently, what's required is that if they don't stay within that, and this is only by executive order, if they don't stay within that allowable growth factor, then they have to explain that in a letter to the Department of Education. But again, that's done after the salary agreements are finalized, after the legislature's determined the budget. And
so you're telling me salary agreements are negotiated before the legislature has a chance to act on what that is?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, in many cases that is what happens. Those salary agreements are finalized before the legislature determines the final amount for the state school fund. I would also point out that in a lot of cases those salary agreements cover multiple years. So that's another thing to consider. State agency budgets have been reduced for the PERS rate reduction. Right now in both the governor's budget and in the co-chair's budget, that reduction is not taken. The impact on the state school fund is about $11 million, but the budget, again, has not been adjusted for this reduction. So, again, the question is, do you treat this budget like you've treated any other state agency budget and make that reduction, or do you just basically ignore that?
So you're saying there's some inequities in the budget, state agencies and the school.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winters, I would say that there's inconsistent treatment in this case, considering the actions taken by this legislative body on other state agency budgets.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Joe.
One just has to realize that this is not the typical state agency. I mean, we're also budgeting the funding for 200 and some school districts. And a lot of schools in those districts, so it's just not the same. In higher ed's budget, for instance, we're dealing with, what, 7 institutions. We don't do a budget for each institution. We do a budget that we call the instructional budget, and then we do capital construction budgets, and we never really do see in any formal way how much we're spending at each of the schools, do we, in that budget? At least, if we do, I don't see it. I don't see it as presented to us that way. So there are some budgets that are just going to be, they're not the typical state agency, that's what I'm saying, and they'll have to be done, handled in some kind of unique fashion.
Mr. Chairman, I would just maintain that that's the policy choice in front of you for the rest of the members of the body.
Do you think it would be possible to handle them more like a state agency? Is that what you're saying? And you'd have some proposals to do that, things that could be done?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, I do believe there are actions that could be taken. At this time, I do have a proposal in terms of the current service level development, and I'll get to that in a few minutes. One other example that I would put before you is, you heard anecdotal information about schools' utility costs increasing and the not having, you know, the budget adjusted for that, the $5.2 billion adjusted for that. There are other agencies, state agencies, that have that run facilities. Corrections is an example. That budget was not adjusted. Should they experience increased utility costs in the next biennium, they will be expected to manage within their resources granted by the legislature and take management actions to do that. And finally, I would put as another example in front of you is that other state agency budgets are often increased for sources of funds other than the general fund. For example, increases in federal funds offset general fund. And historically, this hasn't been done for the state school fund. I'm sure you're all aware that there has been discussion about using the increased federal IDEA money to possibly offset some of the general fund in the state school fund. There have been arguments by the opponents of that those monies are distributed differently than the state school fund dollars, and it's not a dollar-for-dollar offset, and there are winners and losers in that regard. I would maintain that one of the ways that you could mitigate that was looking at your school distribution formula for the special ed students. If you change the weight for that slightly, you would mitigate that winners and losers impact. What I'm really trying to say here is that it's, you know, highly likely, given the president's proposed funding for schools, the bipartisan support in Washington, that there are going to be significant increases in federal funding for education. As you know, you adjusted the grant and aid budget by $100 million in anticipation of that. I will say that it's not finalized. It won't be finalized until the fall. There's not concrete knowledge about just what flexibility there will be with those funds and what kinds of federal regulations may come along with those. But what the Legislative Fiscal Office would recommend is that you do look at all sources of funding for schools when you're considering the K-12 budget. Just to wrap up this conversation, you know that the state provides approximately two-thirds of all funds for schools, again, resulting in certain school districts having larger portions of state funding in their budgets than some fairly large state agency have in theirs. Yet at this time, even with the database initiative project, you know, other than anecdotally, comparatively little about the school district's budget and what truly constitutes current service level for those than you do about the state agencies. What I would recommend in this regard, then, is that you not, even though on your spreadsheet, your two-page spreadsheet that I handed out to you, even though there's a section for the current service level, I would just recommend that you not adopt that specifically. and that you adopt a statement of expectations that acknowledges the need to refine the current service level methodology used to develop the state school fund budget. And I think the statement should include some direction to the Department of Education for their participation, the Legislative Fiscal Office, and the Department of Administrative Services to continue refining the methodology using available data out there. And that would include using teacher salary data that's currently available at the Department of Education, which really was not considered by the School Revenue Forecast Committee because at that time it was considered not really clean data. And
how are we to use the QUEM, the Quality Education Model?
Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, I don't think the two are linked, quite frankly. I think that that's a budget model that's predicated on a certain level of performance that's expected and certain input. What the current service level methodology should address is what are schools currently doing now and how much does that cost?
Yes.
Are you finished, Senator? Well, what do you mean, clean data?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, as I understand it, the schools are submitting the teacher salary data to the Department of Education, but it had not been analyzed, looked at closely.
Why not?
Cleaned up. Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, I'm not sure I can answer that, and I don't know if there's anybody from the Department.
Well, how are we supposed to make a determination when, okay, let's just say it. Teacher salaries are probably the overriding factor in funding schools. That's the major thing, then why isn't this data presented to us in a way that we can analyze it? How do you expect us to make a decision?
Mr. Chair and Representative Smith, I don't disagree with you at all. I think it is data that is very important and should be considered when you are making this decision.
Someone from the department or DAS hear from you? And just while I'm thinking, I agree with what I heard Senator Trow say. I think in some way, in our budget notes or in our expectations, we ought to recommend the use of the QEM because, to me, that's what that's all about. It's a tool to try to develop a budget that's cost-effective, but what's most important, you know, is delivering a certain type of education, a real quality education at every grade level. So when we get down to the expectations or budget notes, I would like to include that in here. Yes.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Nancy Heiligman, Director of School Finance for the Department of Education. To respond to Representative Smith's question, I think this is a very positive sign that we are having this conversation today. The School Revenue Forecast Committee met for the first time during the interim, and we worked, I think, very hard to come up with a current service level budget based on the data that we had at the time. And I agree with the recommendations from LFO that that is a valuable process and that we should continue that. As far as why we didn't have clean data, the database initiative for the first time we have collected data, school level data that is available statewide, and we had 1 year of data that wasn't collected and ready for use at the time that the committee met. I believe that over time, as we collect more data and we learn more about it, that we will have very powerful tools with the database initiative and the quality ed models. We can begin to build a very credible current service level budget number. I am not convinced that treating school districts exactly like other state agencies in terms of current service level is the best way to go. I think there are some differences, and that is sort of an apples and oranges kind of comparison. But I think that we can come up with a much better methodology that we could all support, and I'm very pleased to hear the recommendations that this work go forward.
Dave?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. Dave Fazier from DAS Budget and Management. We were responsible at DAS for being the for chairing the school revenue forecast committee. The intention of that committee was to attempt to estimate as best we could what would be a reasonable current service level amount of dollars that schools might expect to be able to receive, and to break that down and send that information out to the school district so that they could use that in their collective bargaining process. As LFO has stated, and I think I concur with Department of Education, that this is the first cycle we've gone through in this process. It is extremely valuable, and to the extent that we used a methodology that needs to be refined, we see that as an just a challenge for each reiteration of the process. It fits well into the state's budgeting cycle. It also does need to be extended and connected with the quality education model process. And in particular, to answer Representative Smith's inquiry on why the data wasn't clean, it's because the data has never been collected and used before. So what we did was we put them on notice early on in the process, Department of Ed, that we would be expecting to want to use that information. At the time we had made our estimate for the governor's rec budget, it was not clean enough that we would want to use it for statistical purposes. However, as Department of Ed has just indicated, that they would be focusing on cleaning that data up on a regular basis, so we use it in our annual cycle.
Okay, Representative Close, and then Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave, last session before the House Education Committee, we were told that salaries are about 84% of the total budget. Is that figure still correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, I believe that that's a fairly accurate statistic now, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Smith?
Nancy, excuse me. Don't school districts supply the Department of Education with a budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, yes, that's correct. They send their annual budget document to us, and
aren't salaries outlined in that?
Yes.
So if school districts are able to do it, why can't the department do it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, the department does not analyze each school budget individually. We do,
but you can extract salary information from each individual budget.
That's correct, and this year for the first time we have that in an automated system so that we can do that. This is the first year that the 1999-2000
well,
year.
Well, if you can't tell what the salaries are, then what are you doing at the Department of Education? I find this just totally inexcusable that you're coming to try to negotiate something that's one of the hottest issues in the K-12 budget, teacher salaries, and you're not prepared to tell us what they are.
Representative Smith, Chairman Hartung, the department does have data on salary levels, what the total dollars are that schools are spending. We also now have automated data on actual individual teacher salaries, and we'll be able to compute salary increases. We're also going to be able to look at teacher turnover and the cost of bringing in new teachers versus retiring teachers. So we do have a wealth of data that we'll be able to analyze, and I believe that we will be able to estimate very closely current service level budgets. In the past, this was a manual system, and frankly, the data was not available to analyze in it.
Well,
an automated
I don't think that's true. You're going to come to me and say data is not available on how much teachers make in this state. That's also inexcusable. Now, do you have a position on this policy package we're considering today, whether to treat the K-12 budget as a regular state agency or to keep them separate? And how can you defend either one of those positions if you're not prepared to bring clean data to this committee today?
Mr. Chair, Representative Smith, The department is not ready today to take a position on whether or not the school's current service level budget should be treated exactly like state agencies. And I don't believe that...
Why not?
I don't believe that there is a mutual understanding between the other agencies that the department is working with and the department about the differences.
You don't need a mutual understanding between other agencies. What the Department of Education needs is to provide data and work with the best way it can in the K-12 funding of our schools, because that is your advocate. What other departments isn't, I don't believe, your function. I am just totally appalled that you cannot provide clean data with one of the most important financial issues facing the entire state of Oregon budget.
Representative Smith, Chairman Hartung, I believe that we can do that in the future. And that is really because of the investment that the legislature has made in the data systems at the department.
Dave Fager, do you have a comment about what we're talking about?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee. I'd like to relate to you when I came to the state of Oregon in 1994 and came to DAS Budget Management in 1995 and first started dealing with the K-12 budget in the budget process. I personally was aghast at what we didn't have at that time in order to properly look at K-12 budgets and look at what kind of resources are out there to produce a specific product. One of the first difficulties was in a legislative hearing, I met Walter Kosher, who's sitting in the rear of the room, who is Mr. K-12. And I got together with him and I said, would you, obviously you must have some data somewhere. I mean, let me see the data. Well, Walter took me upstairs on the third floor of the public service building and showed me the vast array of file cabinets that contained volumes and volumes and volumes of school district data. So the first problem was presented, in fact, that Department of Ed didn't have an army of people to manually walk through this process. And so the Database Initiative Project was born, and we said we have to have an ability to look at, analyze, manipulate this information. There's only one way to do it. It all has to be engineered into a system. So Department of Ed says has just made the statement that we believe we'll be able to do that more and better in the future, and it is specifically because there has been a multi-year effort toward regimenting the information and gaining additional information from school districts and putting it in a reporting format that we can use as decision makers and as policy makers.
Thank you, Dave. Members, I'd like to move along here, and so Sue, back to the statement of expectations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just reiterate that I would recommend that you adopt a statement of expectation that acknowledges the need to continue refining the current service level methodology used to develop the state school fund budget.
Is that what it would say, basically?
Yes, Mr. Chair and Senator Trow, yes.
That's what you're doing, is reading what you would suggest as a statement of okay.
Again, that should include some direction to the Department of Education to participate, as well as the Legislative Fiscal Office, Department of Administrative Services, and the results of whatever efforts happen on that level could be made available to the School Revenue Forecast mm-hmm. Committee. You also might want to consider having an interim report provided to the Emergency Board on this issue, so you're not just waiting until the next legislative session when you get this information. And in terms of the comment made about the QEM, I would caution you in linking the two that closely. And the reason is because, at least in my mind, that is a policy, more of a policy option package. If you're talking about funding, fully funding or partially funding the QEM, and in fact, the $220 million that's not in this current service level budget but is considered a policy option package in the governor's budget.
Let's see, I need to talk about that a little bit more. So what I hear you say is the school improvement fund, the $220 million.
That's a phase-in.
Right, and so that's
the quality ed model that was presented as a policy option package, and I would maintain that any funding over a current service level budget, however it's calculated, that attempts to either partially or fully implement the quality education model be treated as a policy choice by the legislature and not mixed up with the current service level budget. Because again, what the current service level budget should tell you is what it costs to continue services at the current level.
And so you're saying that the school improvement of the $220 million shouldn't be considered in developing the current service level for the next biennium?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm sorry if I'm not clear. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
What I'm saying is anything new that would come along as a result of the QEM, for example, the next phase-in may be proposed in the next governor's budget. I would just really caution you to try to avoid linking those two. Try to avoid saying if the Quality Education Commission determines that X billion dollars is what it costs to fully phase in, you know, the Quality Ed Commission, that's not your current service level budget. That's a policy choice. What you still really need is to know, okay, we're funding schools at $5.2 billion for 0103. When you get to 0305, what does it cost to continue that level of service? Not any proposed phase-in of the next phase-in of the quality ed model, nothing new, but just the current level of services that they're providing. So I would really caution you that you don't mix up the two. You may want to have language in there about it, but I wouldn't describe.
Well, we need to discuss that more because frankly, I use the QEM, as a tool to justify the school improvement program. In this case, the 220. I have to have some way to tell the people why the $220 million is a good investment, and the only way I know to approach that is through the efforts of like a QEM or some kind of commission. But I also understand what you're saying, and so maybe we can write that up strongly in our expectations. And while we're on this subject, and I do have to get off of it, Ozzie, would you come forward and make a couple comments, please, about what we're talking about here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. I just wanted to make a couple points that might help you deal with this. One, we are very supportive of development process that gets a good CSL. Mm-hmm. And the issue of whether we're treated exactly like a state agency or not, that comes out of the CSL discussion. In general, I think we ought to be. There are differences. And one of the differences, the ratio of staff to other kinds of costs. 84% of our money does go to salaries and benefits. But our business is teaching kids, and we use people to do that. So that's, yes, a lot spent there, but that's where we're a little different than some other agencies. A second area where we're different is over half of our employees are in our three counties where the cost of living is the highest in the state. We spent $125,000 a couple of years ago to look into the differences in cost of living around the state, and we junked the study because once it came out, everybody was helped by it. Wasn't helped by it, didn't like it. But the point is that over half of our employees are congregated because they're where the kids are, they're where the people are, and they're where it's a, and you have to compete with that high cost of living, da 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 da. So that's a little different than state agencies. Also, the issue of funding unfilled positions. Sue mentioned that one of the ways that the budget's done for state agency, they say, okay, we'll do this much, then you got to manage the other cost. And one of the way that's done is they fund unfunded positions and they don't fill them. We don't get to fund unfunded positions. We build a budget for next year for X number of teachers because there's X number of kids. So we don't have that question. And these are not complaints. These are, that there are some differences, and we have not done a very good job of trying to connect. Now, why haven't we? We've only been a state-funded system for a decade. In fact, less than a decade. We started a decade ago. And we inherited a system of 300 local school boards of all kinds of sizes of schools. We've done away with a third of them in this decade. Lots of those school districts don't have a business manager. They have a deputy clerk with no training other than a high school degree and then taught how to keep the books. And the state and all agencies, we have been very, very reluctant to invest money in research and development kinds of stuff and the use of technology. And we have tried throughout this decade to help the State Department get more resources to really build a database for all 300 school districts. And we've had a tough time that's the kind of stuff that gets cut when you get in a tight budget. And I also agree with the issue of the role of the QEM. The QEM is not a CSL. The QEM, though, helps to decide what investment we're going to make beyond the CSL. I think it ought to be on the table, because I think the QEM, and I talked to Reverend Smith about this the other day, about how should you use the response to the QEM. It's a very important tool, but it's a different issue than the CSL.
Yes, it is.
And everybody, but it ought to be on the table in discussion so you make good policy decisions. And last thing I would say, we have built a capacity at the State Department just over the last 3 years to really build a database. And I don't, you know, I've been around while they piled up all those cartons of stuff. It is very, very difficult to build a database that handles Plush and handles Portland and handles Port Orford, except we get away with Port Orford now. So we don't need to worry about that one. And so I think your budget note ought to talk about that we need to look at the CSL. We ought to build a good one, and the players ought to be involved. I think they did a really good job what they had to work with, notwithstanding some of the criticisms of it at this point. But those criticisms are based on stuff that wasn't known 6 months ago in part. Mm-hmm. Not totally, but in part. And so I think your budget note ought to say, let's move ahead of this. I also don't think you ought to mess around with that sheet that says 5.210 or whatever it says on it either. Okay. That's all I got to say. Thank you.
Didn't bring you forward to hear that.
Oh, okay.
Thank you very much. Any questions for us? Yes, Representative Close.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One comment that you made, I think, should be clarified, and that is the point that before we went to a state-funded system, in my district, I taught in the late 70s, early 80s, at that point it was 80% of the budget that went to salaries. Now in that district it's 86, so there has been a creep upward of the percentage that goes to salaries with a state-funded system, unlike what was previously the locally funded system. Isn't that true?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, I don't know if those numbers might be precise for that district. I don't know if they're statewide. And a lot of that creep is in the huge increase in the cost of health benefits. The same health benefits proportionally are costing a lot more of the dollars that we have.
So, Mr. Chair, follow up.
Sure.
But isn't it true that that the budget has increased significantly? It's, 35% in the past 10 years? So you're dealing with a lot more money than you were then.
Chair, of course, that's correct. But you're still about what percentage of your budget you're investing in it. And the budget has increased to 35%. Inflation's increased more than that. I mean, there's all kinds of things you can do with the percentages, but inflation has increased faster than our budget on a per student basis.
And I'd like to use the example, too, like in the Beaverton District, you know, in our effort to cut down, for instance, administrative costs and other costs so that we could invest more in teachers. Why, of course, percentage-wise, then, if you're going to cut the total budget in certain areas and invest more in teachers, why, percentage-wise, it will increase. So we have to be careful how we use the percentages in terms of where we are investing our money. But it certainly is true that 84% at least, and in some cases 86% is for the teachers. Any other questions or comments?
Chair, I would
just
say real quickly
that
this is why we need the numbers. This is why we need the raw data.
Absolutely.
Just on the radio this morning, I heard my school district what the accepted budget was. The radio station can get those numbers the next day. We ought to be able to get those numbers.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Ozzie. Okay, let's move on here soon.
Okay. Mr. Chair, let me just quickly mention something that was...
Yeah, while I'm thinking of it, so will LFO come to this committee with a recommendation on a budget note, or can we get it all in the expectations or recommendations?
Do it either way, Mr. Chair.
Well, you do it the way you think would be most effective for the department and for all interested people. Okay.
In addition to that concept about the current service level and how it should be determined, could you also have a statement about the use of the quality education model and how that should be in your opinion, so we have that.
Okay, thank you. All right, what now?
Just briefly, in the information that I distributed, you'll see that
letter from the department asking for an increase in expenditure limitation because of unanticipated timber privilege tax revenue received this year. And I just wanted to point out that we'll have to do a supplemental limitation for the department in 5514 so that they can distribute those. But we can take that up in the next work session.
Will that be in the form of an amendment to 5514? Okay.
And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about today, it's in Senate Bill 5514. You should have a copy of that in front of you. My recall from last session, there were caps placed on the total distribution from the state school fund. And any excess over the cap was dedicated to debt service on education lottery bonds. And the caps are based on close of session estimates of the local resources plus the state portion of the state school fund. And as you can imagine, these estimates can differ up or down from what actually occurs in the biennium. And of course, the whole point was if they if the revenues go up, then the state would be able to recapture a portion of the state school fund and use that for debt service on education lottery bonds. Let me just give you a little history about what happened this biennium, and so you can understand why I'm proposing that you consider a change in those caps. For the 99-01 biennium, there was an excess that was expected from 97-99, and that excess was budgeted for debt service. And it fluctuated, but when the excess was transferred to a debt service account, it was actually a little bit higher than what was ultimately available. And the actions that had to be taken in order to kind of fix everything were time-consuming and, in my opinion, avoidable. And then there was another development that was kind of ironic. There was this transfer to the debt service account, but then there was a shortfall in local revenue. And the Department of Education came to the emergency board, and there was an allocation of about $22 million from the emergency fund to backfill this shortfall in local revenues in 99-01. And as you can see, it was about the same amount that was transferred as an excess from the 97-99 state school fund to service the debt. And had there been an ability to just hold on to that excess cover a subsequent shortfall, then the emergency board action would have been avoided, and we also would have avoided the kind of administrative problems that we had that I mentioned before. Now, I will point out that the legislature would have had to have provided some other source of debt service in the 99-01 budget had it not assumed the local resource from 97-99. I've talked with the Legislative Revenue Office, I've talked with the Department of Administrative Services, and I've talked with Legislative Council, and I would like to put before you this change in the caps on these total distributions. First of all, because those revenues, those local revenues can fluctuate, I would recommend that you allow for a margin of error. And so that what you do is you look at the forecasted local revenues at the end of session and you add 2% to that. And that's where you set your threshold. And essentially what this allows the school districts to do is to retain a certain level of unexpected revenues, local revenues, should they materialize. And in this case, it would be about $20 million annually in the 01-03 biennium. Now, they would have the flexibility to use, for example, any excess from the first year as they so choose. They could park it in a reserve in anticipation of maybe a shortfall in the second year, or they could use it in the current year. But the decision would be local. And then once any excess did exist over this threshold amount, if there was an excess in the first year of the biennium, the statute would be worded so that that could be transferred if necessary to backfill any shortfall in the second year of the biennium. Previously, we've had caps where they were set annually and there couldn't be a transfer between the years. And then finally, the proposal would include changing the law so that the any reserve or leftover resources are not dedicated to debt service. Not that you're not going to, you know, make your debt service payments, but the legislature has the ultimate responsibility to provide that. And I think that removing the relationship between these reserves excesses and the debt service is administratively a better thing to do. What would happen then under this proposal that I'm putting before you is that if at the end of any biennium there is an excess, that it would stay in the state school fund as a reserve for the next legislature to consider, either when they're setting the overall appropriation for the state school fund, or just to leave it there so that if there are unexpected shortfalls in local revenues in the next biennium for which they're budgeting, that money would be available. So it ties those resources more closely to what they're originally intended for, and that is the state school fund. So I just put that before you as an idea, as a change in the current law, and you can make that decision, of course, at the next work session.
Okay. Senator Tro.
It seems to me that does two things that are positive. One, it removes a lot of the unpredictability of how much money there's going to be, because you never know for sure what is going to be in excess of the cap, and then also it adds flexibility so that you can use the monies if you need to for unexpected problems that are there, and eventually you pick up that service anyway. So it seems to make it better than the way we're doing it, I think.
Okay, members, I do need to adjourn the meeting. Sue, anything else that we must do now? We are not scheduled to meet tomorrow at this point, but we are on 1 hour notice, and so there may be a meeting tomorrow, and if there's no other business, we will adjourn the work session.